Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Mostly Mets podcast, where we talk mostly about the Mets. This is an interesting episode. There's lots going right in Mets land. The young pitchers are pitching well. I'm looking at you, Noah Syndergaard and Steven Matz. The guys are hitting home runs. The whole lineup, that's great. But there's kind of a missing element at the top. Matt Harvey, supposed to be the ace of this rotation, is not pitching as well as you would expect, given what he's done this year. So we'll talk about that with the Doug Thorburn from Baseball Prospectus and RotoWire, the author of the Raising Aces column. So this will be a Matt Harvey-focused episode. With that, I'm Toby Hyde. Rob Brender is with us. Rob, how are you?
I'm fantastic, thank you. I guess, Toby, that Matt Harvey right now is kind of the one area of concern around this team, right? Is there anything else that we'd be worried about like we are Matt Harvey?
25th spot on the roster? I'm kidding.
Yeah, right.
Eric Campbell's in the big leagues.
But that's okay. He's rarely playing.
Right,
but really, right? I mean, things are going really well for this team. They're winning series after series. Sure, the competition hasn't been spectacular. They haven't played the elite teams in the league for the most part, except for the Giants, and that was a fantastic series for the Mets to take 2 out of 3 there. Yep. But really, things have been going very well. They're healthy as a team, except Matt Harvey, and that's kind of the puzzling part of this. What's going on with Matt Harvey?
I would add, of course, that the other issue is that Travis d'Arnaud is hurt again.
Well, there's that too.
But I think Harvey's a bigger one. Because sure. Harvey at his best is a Cy Young caliber pitcher. Travis d'Arnaud at his best probably is an all-star level catcher, but he hasn't been healthy enough long enough to prove that ever.
Right. You're very right. And you know, the one thing about that is in the past, maybe even just as soon as or more as recently as about a year ago, I would have said, well, that's the luxury the Mets have, that they have these two stud young catchers. But we really haven't seen Kevin Plawecki do much at the big league level yet. So
no.
You can't say that at all. Rene Rivera might be their best catcher.
Yep. The Mets and you talked about the series. The Mets have won 6 straight series. So and the schedule hasn't been great, but you can only beat the teams that you're playing. You know, you have to sort of calibrate how good you think the Mets are, but you know what? You can only beat the teams you're playing.
Right, correct.
So Harvey, and this is so weird with Harvey, because when you look at the numbers, they are all appreciably worse than anything he's ever done. His career ERA is 2.69. Right now it's 4.75.
Not good.
No, you know, and he's getting fewer swinging strikes than he ever has in his career. He is getting guys are making more contact against pitches in the zone. Out of the zone, his velocity is down, his location looks off. It looks like it's a little bit of everything, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. He's just been a mess so far. So, to put it kindly, it's true.
So we have with us one of the Internet's great pitching mechanics guys. Doug Thorburn writes the Raising Aces column at Baseball Prospectus. He's a contributor at RotoWire and RotoGrinders. He's got his own podcast as well. So it's my pleasure to introduce Doug Thorburn. Doug, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on, guys.
Doug, Matt Harvey just doesn't look like the same guy. The results aren't what he and the Mets have become accustomed to. So how worried should Mets fans be about Matt Harvey?
I think it's time to get legitimately worried. I mean, this is a guy, what we are seeing from him right now, it's not just a really bad stretch. It's worse than anything we saw even on any individual game last season. In fact, his last game against the Braves, his velocity average was a 93.9 miles an hour, according to Brooks Baseball, which was his low for the season. And I don't think he had a game all season last year where it was that low.
So the question really is then, what can we attribute this to? Do you think?
Well, for me, it goes way beyond velocity. Velocity is just kind of the tip of the iceberg. And with Harvey, it's kind of a combo deal. I don't know if you guys remember when they were first advertising StatCast, and they used to show off his extension and to say, look, a 97-mile-an-hour fastball from Harvey feels like it's 99 to a hitter because he would release the ball so deep. He had a great momentum, a long stride, and because he had such an efficient delivery, I've actually given him an A in the past for his mechanics. He achieved a really deep release point. So as fast as he was throwing the ball, it felt even faster. Well, this year, not only has he's lost a little bit, and a lot of times I feel that people will kind of overblow velocity readings in April because so many pitchers take time to ramp up. But with Harvey, he was pretty much at the beginning of the season from his first start last year, he was where he was going to be all year long. So you compare his April of this year to April of last year, or you compare it to his average, it looks pretty rough. But on top of that, to me, he's getting much less extension on the ball. So you combine that lack of extension with lower actual velocity readings, and hitters are having what before might have felt like 99 miles an hour, now might feel like 95, 94, 93, or even less. And so he's giving batters a much larger window of time to figure out what pitch is coming, what location, whether or not to swing. There are so many ripple effects when it comes to that. I'm a big advocate of release extension, and I used to point at Matt Harvey as a guy who was a difference maker in that area. I'm not seeing that this year. I'm kind of a mechanics junkie, so of course I'm going to focus on mechanics. And one thing you can kind of see in the numbers, and this is something you can see on Brooks Baseball, his vertical release point has gone up by about 0.2 feet, which isn't much. It's only a few inches. And there's a couple of ways that can happen. A lot of times, guys, they increase what I call spine tilt. So they tilt their head to the glove side, and they end up artificially raising their arm slot. And that's not what's happening here with Harvey. He's never been a great, what I call a posture. He's never been a great posture guy, but he's always been safely above average. And to me, that's not what's happening. He actually looks like he's trying to manipulate a higher release point with his angle of shoulder abduction. And what that is, that's kind of like if you're raising your hand in class from when you're a kid, you know, like it's shoulder abduction is how much they're raising that shoulder angle. And he looks like he's reaching. And when I see how he's reaching and how he's achieving that high release point, it's contributing to his lack of extension. So this is to me a major issue that has kind of ripple effects, if you know what I mean. And it's impacting his command, it's impacting his velocity, it's impacting his ability to hit that deep extension at release point. It has ripple effects all over the place.
So why is the release point higher? What would cause that? Is his timing off? Can you pinpoint why his shoulder movement is different now?
The big question is whether he's doing it intentionally or whether it's an indicator of something going wrong functionally. So a lot of times when it comes to, for example, the spine tilt thing, a lot of times guys just aren't as strong as they were at one point in their career. So it affects their balance. So that ends up having a ripple effect on posture. Well, for Harvey, that's not the issue. With Harvey, it's an abduction thing. Now, if you see a release point lower, a lot of time that tells you that his shoulder is weak because that's his way of compensating. He can't physically he can't physically sustain that same high angle of shoulder abduction. But Harvey's actually taller. So in a lot of ways, he's kind of going against the usual suspects as far as what we would pinpoint as far as an issue. Now, that tells me that it is something that is blatant, that he has control over. So he should be able to manipulate it to a certain extent. To me, it looks like his goal is to release the ball from a higher release point rather than a deeper one. Now, maybe this isn't conscious. Maybe it's just a byproduct of some other issues. In fact, to me, I look at one of the big generators of velocity as being hip-shoulder separation or torque. And I'm noticing less torque from him this year. And he's a big lower half guy where he waits until after foot strike, after that front foot hits the ground, to allow the hips to kind of to rotate and open up before he really fires the upper half. You know what I mean? Some guys, it's one right on top of the other. He used to have a nice pronounced delay between foot strike and when he would initiate that trigger. I'm not seeing that this year. It's almost like he lacks the flexibility, like he can't do it. And that's what it could be to me. It could be a lack of functional flexibility. And if it's a lack of flexibility, well, this could be the way that he's just trying to throw baseballs right now, but he's compromised. He's not able to do functionally, physically, what he was able to do before. And not only is that an obvious big problem, but to see the way that he's compensating, it's having a snowball effect.
Doug, that's interesting. That reminds me, and I think it was Ron Darling on the broadcast on SNY, but might have been others, someone else, talked a bunch in spring training and early the season about how Harvey looked really strong and he seemed like he was in great shape. I wonder if some of that offseason strength is now impeding his flexibility and preventing him from getting that separation that you used to really like.
That's a great point. Absolutely. I've actually seen quite a bit of that. You see a lot of guys who, when they go to the gym, they try to work on the beach muscles and they end up losing a lot of that flexibility. I've seen some guys that just became absolutely yoked out and lost you know, 6-7 miles an hour off their fastball because they lost that flexibility. So yeah, that could be related.
Yeah, and it scares me a little when I see pitchers with ripped muscles.
Yeah, a pitcher is not designed to be a big hulking guy. I mean, back when I worked at the National Pitching Association, we were down in San Diego. Most of our best pitchers were surfers, and it's because they worked on those backside shoulder muscles, paddling out on the waves every day. You know, that's an exercise that is actually supporting their job as pitchers, as opposed to working on the front side beach muscles.
Interesting. Well, I got to be honest, though, and I don't really know where Ronnie's getting that. Maybe he sees him a little more than I do and certainly has during the regular season. But in spring training, when I was around them on a very regular basis for a 3-week period, especially early in camp, I didn't notice him looking much different at all. He's never come across to me, at least in the last couple of years, as really being a you know, quote unquote, ripped guy. I mean, he's not, no. You know, a specimen by any means. I don't look at him and say, no. even with the body issue that he did, I was wondering why the heck did they pick him? It just it doesn't make a whole lot of sense other than his popularity at the time. So I'm not sure I see that. But I'm curious about the lower half issue, since you mentioned that. I think it was a couple of weeks ago, or maybe even sooner, more recent, that Dan Worthen said something about working with Harvey on his knee bend. Have you noticed that being any issue at all, and maybe something that he's done more so this year, bending a little further down?
Well, you know what was really interesting? Because I read that same quote, and he was talking about the what we often refer to as the backside collapse. And it's, you're right, it's that back knee. It tends to bend too far. That, at least that's what he was talking about, which lowers the pitcher's center of gravity. So that's going to impact his balance. So that would definitely be an issue. So I went looking for that, and there was a little bit more of that. However, it wasn't an across-the-board glaring issue that I noticed from one year to the other. And also, Worthen mentioned that it was something that was only happening in the stretch. And so he was having these – he would cruise for 4 or 5 innings, and all of a sudden everything would happen at once. But I was noticing from the windup and the stretch, he did have a little bit more of that backside collapse. But what you often see is that guys with the backside collapse, they have actually more momentum because they're exaggerating the drop and drive strategy. And so as part of that backside collapse, they're trying to, quote unquote, push off the rubber really hard. But I didn't see that with Harvey. In fact, this is a guy who used to have very strong momentum, you know, plus borderline plus momentum that is now close to average. So he's moving slower and he has that lower center of gravity, and yet he's reaching for a taller release point. And he's generating less hip-shoulder separation. I mean, this, to me, this screams a guy who lacks flexibility.
I'm trying to figure out how you get lower on your back leg and end up with a higher release point.
It's all about how the balance point moves throughout the delivery. Ideally, it should be a nice, stable...
We should have video with this podcast.
We really should, yeah. But ideally, it would follow consistently with the slope of the mound. But when you have a pitcher with a big backside collapse, and especially one who's trying to manipulate a tall arm slot, you'll see their center of gravity drop early. So that backside collapse, we're talking about right after maximum leg lift. So it's pretty early in the delivery, still during the stride phase. The tall release point happens after foot strike. You see some of these guys where their center of gravity lowers during the stride phase, and then as soon as the front foot hits the ground, they start almost standing up again. Which you can imagine what that does to balance. All of a sudden, you've got balances going up. I mean, excuse me, it's going, well, yeah, up into max leg lift, down during stride, and then back up again into release point, rather than having a nice, consistent height that is consistent with the slope of the mound.
I see. So it's down and then up at the finish.
Exactly.
Since you were talking about flexibility, The one thing that popped in my mind right away is how Jake Arrieta's offseason workout has been going. We're seeing obviously all the success and the fruits of his labor on the field right now. But it seems like that is what he's concentrated on the most, is flexibility. Yeah, there's that great picture. I don't know what magazine published it, where he's, what is he, upside down, and he's contorting his body, and his legs are, he's basically doing a full split upside down. I've never seen anything like that from a pitcher. Is that like the new thing? Is that a way that pitchers are learning to gain more flexibility, and that's you know, kind of become the in vogue thing?
Well, it's definitely not new. I mean, Randy Johnson used it. Nolan Ryan used it. It's something that might be popular based on whoever is doing well at this time. What I love about the Arrieta comp is that, or even bringing him up in this situation, is that his issues, when I look at the difference between before he was otherworldly and what he is now, it really boiled down to having consistent momentum. And that's something that I was talking about with Harvey, where with Arrieta, he used to have a very inconsistent stride. Sometimes he would stop at the top, sometimes he wouldn't. The timing pattern was different every stinging pitch. It was maddening to watch. And we actually, at BP, we had some of our guys got video footage from the stands of Cubs pitching coach Chris Bosio working with Arrieta. This is prior to the, I think it was prior to the 2014 season. Anyways, and they're working on exactly that, that transition through leg lift to have a nice consistent momentum to get a bigger burst and closer to the plate. And I'm not going to say that's the full reason why he's been incredible. I mean, the slider is a huge reason why, especially because it has two shapes to it. But that gave him that consistent momentum, that consistent timing. It allowed him to find the same release point so that he could put the baseball where he wants to. And it's funny how in today's day and age, velocity is king and command kind of gets pushed by the wayside. But if you can command the baseball and put it wherever you want to, you don't necessarily have to throw 99 in order to be optimally effective. And Arrieta, I mean, he's got great stuff, but it's his pitch command that has really allowed him to ascend to the level that he has.
And that's one of the things that's frustrating watching Harvey this year. The command just isn't there. It seems like he's getting hurt on a lot of stuff elevated. But when I looked at the numbers and Brooks baseball breaks the strike zone down into thirds, it's not like there are a lot more pitches in the top third of the zone. What's striking to me about it is that there are a lot of pitches outside the bottom of the zone. So it looks like he's trying to get the ball down, but he doesn't have a feel for where it should be. So these mechanical issues, how much do they impact location and how much velocity?
Oh, big time. I mean, most of what we're talking about is actually location. I mean, the hip-shoulder separation is tied to velocity, and the extension at release point is tied to perceived velocity, so what the hitter experiences. But I think command's the biggest thing, and in fact, probably so much attention is being paid to velocity right now. You look at his breaking pitches. I mean, his slider and curve used to be pitches that accounted for about a third of his strikeouts, and this year he's got, what, four total? With his slider and curve, and it seems to me, and this is a little bit anecdotal, it's just based on what I've watched, but it seems like he's bouncing it a lot. It seems like he's not hanging it a ton, but at the same time, he's not tricking anybody. Nobody's leaving the hand. It used to be hitters had no idea what was coming out of his hand, whether it was a fastball, slider change, curveball, didn't matter. They had no idea, and they had such a small window of opportunity to decide that they were completely at his mercy. Now they have a much bigger window to decide, and he's making it easier on them by putting the baseball in the dirt.
A couple of things that we haven't brought up yet. The blood clot issue that he had during spring training, and that's slowing him down a little bit in his progression. And also the idea of potentially some dead arm, which has been floated out there based on maybe not throwing as many innings in spring training as he normally would have or any other pitcher normally should. Do you see any of those potentially as being an issue or a cause for any of the concern?
The dead arm, it's hard to speak to because unless you're him and you're actually feeling it and experiencing it, it's impossible to know. But I think there could be smoke behind the blood clot explanation just because of what you were saying, that maybe he didn't go through all of his progressions in spring training. If what he's lacking is physical fitness right now, that's usually the kind of thing that guys have all of spring training to cover. And maybe he didn't reach that peak, and maybe he's still not there, but he's trying to pitch through it anyways. It's funny how maybe the best thing for Harvey right now is one or two starts, whether it's in the minors or sim game or whatever, but that don't matter, where he can really retool. But that's not the way the majors work these days. If he's expected to go out there and continue to perform.
I mean, this guy was one of the best pitchers in baseball and a Cy Young Award candidate. He might have won it 2 years ago if he hadn't been hurt.
Yeah, exactly. How can you do that to someone like that? And the Mets are a team with huge pennant hopes. So
could you imagine? I mean, it's almost like admitting that there's a problem, right? It kind of signals to the rest of the league there's a big issue here, doesn't it?
That's true. It does that as well.
I want to do two more things about Matt Harvey before we let you go. I want to get your reaction to Scott Boras' most recent comments about his client and then how'd you fix Harvey. Wednesday, Ken Davidoff in the New York Post talked to Scott Boras. It's always funny, but as an aside, how there are always some reporters with a direct line to Camp Boras, and Davidoff is one of them. But here's what Boras told Davidoff in the Post.
quote, there's something unknown that we're looking at. There's an unknown here that's operating. We're figuring it out as we go. I'm very confident that Matt is physically healthy and very confident that adjustments will be made. He tried to put a silver lining on the unknowns. He said, you know, when Greg Maddux faced an unknown, that caused him to develop his cutter, which is a cute thought. But, you know, he didn't fault the Mets explicitly, although he recognized that Harvey was coming back from Tommy John surgery a year ago. He said, I don't lay any fault to the Mets organization because the success of the team mandated the interruption of that sequencing. That is his ideal sequencing coming back from Tommy John. That sounds like Boris is admitting what we were talking about. Something's a little bit wrong with Matt Harvey. So can you play the everyone's favorite game and parse the Boris here?
I think the unknown is BS. I think all of that is him trying to cover for his client to say there's nothing wrong physically with this guy. To me, both of those lines say the same thing, essentially. I mean, he actually said there's nothing wrong physically with him, but by saying there's something unknown, that is part of his putting people's attention and concentration away from the possibility that it is something physical. I think that it is physical. I think that, yeah, there might be some of these other elements tied into it, but I think unknown is BS. I think they know that something is wrong. I think they have a darn good idea what's wrong. I think Dan Worthen's an excellent pitching coach. I think he's fully on top of it. I think that when Worthen said that there was an issue with his backside collapse, I was surprised for him to even go that specific with the media as far as what was going on with his pitcher. So I didn't expect that to be the whole story. And when I really investigated, I didn't find it to be the whole story, not at all. But I would expect that Worthen knows what's going on. And if what's actually happening is that Harvey doesn't have the flexibility or some of the issues that we've been speaking about, I would expect Boris to do everything he could to deflect that. So I'm not surprised at all by Boris's comments, but I don't pay much heed to them either.
How fixable are some of these issues?
I do think it's fixable. However, I think it starts at the root. And the root right now is functional flexibility. So when it comes down to a physical issue, this isn't something that he's going to figure out by pitching a couple of extra games. This is, like I said, this is what extended spring training is meant for. This is what rehab assignments are meant for. I mean, I understand why the Mets can't necessarily afford to try that, but I absolutely would. I think this is a guy that isn't what he could be, and that's preventing everything from a coaching standpoint. Because Harvey has an amazing learning curve. He has great acumen. His delivery, when you look at it last season, is amazing. So the fact that he's not doing what he's physically able to do and they're trying to work around it it's like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. It's just not going to work. So you've got to figure out, basically get him right first, and then you can work on getting his mechanics right. Otherwise, you're training a new mechanical signature on whatever his physicality is right now. And right now, that's a problem. So I think to fix this guy, it does come down to conditioning. It does come down to those physical baselines. I think that it's not necessarily that something is wrong, but he's not at physical peak. And guys don't age 6 years in the span of an offseason.
Well, and then he showed his work ethic.
Come back the way he did. Oh.
Right, exactly. I was just going to say, he showed the work ethic of a guy who's willing to put it in yet again to get to that point. All right, Toby, am I clear to ask about everybody else? Because I like the other guys, too. I really do. I mean, they're great. I just read a quote. This is 2 minutes ago on Twitter. And I don't know if this isn't from a trusted source, but it's regarding Steven Matz. No, it's a good one. It's from Terry Collins after the game today, and we're recording this, Wednesday? Yeah, it's Wednesday. Okay, so they had just beaten the Braves, and it says, quote, I trust our minor league people. They've told me this guy might be better than all of them in the end. And by all of them, of course, he means the rest of the rotation. Toby and I are at the point now where we're developing a segment on Noah Syndergaard for our show every week just because he's been incredible, and I think I enjoy watching him pitch more than anybody else. And the idea that somebody, the manager of the team even, could say that Steven Matz might be better than the rest, including Syndergaard, I would be shocked. I know he's fantastic. Do you think he could actually be better than Noah?
I'm a little cooler on Matz, and I like Matz. I feel that actually before the season, I said in a couple of different places how I felt that the rest of the rotation was building up his stock a little bit. Now, after I've seen more of him this year, I mean, I wouldn't say that my opinion's changed on him, but I think his conversion could be much quicker than I thought it was. But his lack of ceiling compared to the other guys in the rotation has everything to do with the other guys in the rotation. Now, I say that knowing full well that Jacob deGrom went from being a decent pitcher to a stud right before my very eyes. I mean, this is a guy who every single start got better. His mechanics got better. His stuff got better. It was an education just watching the guy pitch and watching him develop in season. So if Matz has that type of, I'm going to use this word again, but acumen, where he can develop his game and continue to improve, who knows? I mean, I don't like putting ceilings on guys' abilities to improve. But the problem is that the other guys in that rotation are insane. How do you beat a Noah Syndergaard? How do you beat what Matt Harvey you should be and could be? How do you beat what DeGrom has done? I mean, the fact that he's left-handed just makes that rotation sick.
I have trouble seeing Matz as better than DeGrom because of DeGrom's control. And Thor because, well, he's Thor.
Yeah.
I'm excited watching him pitch right now, though. I got to tell you that. I mean, he looks fantastic.
Yeah, well, and it's funny, after that first start, I don't know how many people were ready to bail on him after that, but whoo, he's been lights out the last four.
Welcome to Mets land.
So let's talk about Syndergaard for a moment. Can he keep this up? I mean, he's throwing his slider 93 miles per hour.
Yeah, which really gets into the semantics of it, doesn't it? I mean, when is a slider a cutter? When is a cutter a fastball? It's funny. I always use Madison Bumgarner as my example here because people used to be really afraid of his slider usage. They thought that, oh wow, he's throwing 35% sliders. That's a problem. Then his slider got reclassified as a cutter, even though he didn't do anything to it, and it was the same pitch. They just changed the classification in most of the systems, and all of a sudden, nobody says a word. And so it's really funny to me. And especially when you look at the Worthen slider. The Worthen slider, essentially, it almost is a cutter. I mean, it's as close to a fastball as possible. The idea is to throw it really hard, have some downward movement on it, have it be sharp, have it be late, have it leave the hand exactly like a fastball. And it's become such a dynamite weapon for him, just putting a little bit of movement. Because if there was a knock against his elite velocity last year, it was a little bit straight. Well, now he's gone ahead and added a tick, which, you know, as if leading the majors in average fastball velocity wasn't enough. He went ahead and added some. And then on top of that, he's throwing this insane slider. I mean, if Clayton Kershaw didn't exist, we might be looking at the best pitcher in the game right now.
Doug, thanks so much for joining us. I learned something. I enjoyed learning something and hope everyone else did too.
Well, thanks a lot, you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Great stuff. Rob, are you encouraged or discouraged after that chat with Doug?
Well, encouraged in one regard, that it sounds like Doug doesn't think that it's an injury necessarily. It sounds like it's more of a physical fitness issue, in his opinion. If that's the case, you would figure that a guy with Matt Harvey's drive and his athletic skills and ability, that he could ultimately get himself into better shape. So I guess that's somewhat encouraging. However, you know, and this isn't anything against Doug, I just don't think anybody 100% knows, right? It's just one opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Doug's working off of video to come to that flexibility hypothesis. But, you know, sometimes guys are tight and muscles get tight when they sort of precursor to breaking down. So, right. You know, the line between physical fitness and injury is really pretty thin, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm concerned that he's compensating.
Yeah,
you know, maybe that's what Doug was talking about when he's going a little bit higher in his delivery. He's not getting deep enough in his release. You know, is he compensating because he's feeling pain in another area of his body that he hasn't let anybody know about? I mean, there's all sorts of potential issues here that again, I just don't know that anybody can uncover other than Matt. I mean, Matt knows what he's feeling. You know, but I do think, Toby, that there's no way the Mets are going to run him out there every fifth day right now if they think there truly is an injury.
Yeah, and the question is whether it's something that's going to get better by pitching through or whether he needs time down. And Doug talked about that. That's really the big one for me. Oh, and, yeah. And look, before anyone screams small sample size, this is six starts, and this is 34 innings. This is, you know, a couple hundred – this is 100 and some odd batters faced, 150 batters faced. More hits than innings pitched, a strikeout rate well below where we'd expect him, And then on a pitch level, when you get more granular, when he's thrown, you know, whatever it is, 500 pitches or so, and you're looking at a 25 to 11 strikeout to walk ratio in 34 innings, this is not Matt Harvey. So don't yell small sample size. Something's not right with Harvey.
No, absolutely. Completely agree with you. And the shocking thing about this for me, Toby, is that it's happened so quickly, that he's gone from being an ace, a stud, a star in the postseason to all of a sudden, 2 or 3 months later, at the beginning of this season, just looking like a completely different pitcher. And that's the most shocking part of this. And that's what makes me concerned about injury, that there has to be something here. And if it is dead arm and that's really the concern, then great, because usually pitchers can shake that off after a few starts. But it doesn't seem like that's the case.
Yeah, and I'll play optimist to you there. You know, I don't think he's lost it. It's just something that he and everybody else has to figure out.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed.
So, you know, other things are good, right?
Yes, everything else is great. And the Mets are winning games. So despite all this Matt Harvey negativity from this week's episode, everything else, for the most part, is going right for Mets and their fans.
I'll take home runs for 100, please.
Yeah, oh, my God. How much fun is that?
I just expect them to hit a home run, you know, like every inning.
Which is great. I enjoy them. People complaining that they're not manufacturing runs are out of their mind. Who cares?
Right. These manufactured runs are an aesthetic complaint, not a.
Yeah, exactly right. Hit the ball out of the ballpark.
Much more effective.
Good entertainment.
All right. Thanks so much to you, the listener. Thanks so much to Doug Thornburn. And don't forget, we've made it easier for you to listen to all of SNY.TV's original podcasts. So if you're a fan of the Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, or college basketball and recruiting, just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's the SNY.TV audio network, and please make sure to rate and review the channel. Also, for you Islanders fans out there, be sure to check out this week's Point Blank podcast as the Islanders playoff series continues against the Tampa Bay Lightning. So for Rob and for Doug, I'm Toby. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time on the Mostly Mets podcast.
This has been the Mostly Mets podcast, part of the SNY.TV audio network.